And welcome to the Sleeper Wire Show. I'm your host, Jason, and with me tonight, as always, is the Tom to my Jerry, the Rice to my Roni, the Salt to my Sweet, it's George. George, how's it going tonight?
Jason, I'm amazed how every week you come up with something different for that intro. It's actually getting to the point where it's kind of scary. But other than that, to answer your question, I'm doing fantastic.
George, I have this thing. It's called Google.
I know. I'll use that. I'll eventually use that website.
So we are joined tonight, but not by one, but two great guests. Our first one, he's not just an average Joe. He's the brain trust of the Fantasy Six Pack, Joe Bond. Joe, how you doing tonight?
Hey, good. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, just ready to rock and roll, man.
All right. And also we have John Daigle. He actually has John Daigle on Clubhouse, I found out, but he's actually not Jay Daigle on Twitter. John, you know, if I made an app, I'd hold the Daigle for you.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I wish Clubhouse had started in 2011, because then maybe, you know, or I guess Twitter started in Clubhouse time, then maybe I would have got Daigle. But yeah, nonetheless, I am not Jay Daigle there. And of course, I did get lucky with Daigle early enough on Clubhouse. I've even offered money to the people who have Daigle, John Daigle, to no avail. So still hoping I get it. Until that point, I'm just going the complete opposite way and have the miserable handle of not Jay Daigle.
So I have to ask, how much are you offering for that username?
I don't want to say enough numbers, but let's just say that it was respectful enough, because I know that it would help me more than it would help them.
Gotcha.
Still got turned down. So maybe I have to up it even more.
So, and I don't want to like mention any specific Twitter handles here, and I don't want to dwell on this because we have lots of great things to talk about, but this fascinates me too. Do they actually use their Twitter account, or did they just get it and go, no, you can't have it?
The John Daigle, which is the one I'm actually more interested in, hasn't been used since 2016. I've talked to the right people. I've talked to people on Twitter. I have not talked to the right people at Twitter. So if someone's listening and knows someone I can genuinely reach out to, I would love to get in contact. I'd love to talk to somebody higher up. But as for Daigle, he's actually a freelance writer himself. I believe he lives in Austin too. I'm currently in Fort Worth. My parents are in a small suburb from Texas. So like I would even meet up, I'd buy him dinner. I'd do so many things, but he told me, and you know, hats to him, no big deal. He even said that he just wants to keep it. So, okay, whatever. I tried.
I feel like you just made John Daigle mad and now he just won't give it to you.
Maybe that's so.
All right. So guys, we're going to get into the 2020 draft class. And what we expect from the sophomores heading into 2021. We're going to play a game with them called Too High, Too Low, or Just Right. But before that, we're going to jump into the news. The first thing I want to discuss is relating to two quarterbacks. Deshaun Watson told his new coach he still wants a trade, and Russell Wilson told the Seahawks he is open to move. Will either be traded before the season? And if Watson isn't traded, instead of holding out, do you think he could opt out for COVID reasons?
I do not believe he could opt out for COVID reasons. Having said that, you want to start with Deshaun Watson, right?
Yes, absolutely. Sorry.
Okay. So no, you're good. I still just, by his side, it sounds like from him and his agent that he's definitely played the final snap with the Texans. And that makes sense. The Texans are just an odd organization, clown show, whatever you want to call them. I don't think they even know what they're doing personally. They're just a bunch of millionaires at the top trying to make money with their friends, since nothing like cronyism shows so emphatically in that organization from the top down. So they could do genuinely anything and it would not surprise anyone. Having said that, it really does make sense if they were to trade Deshaun Watson, unless they're playing the true PR game of just trying to get any amount of fans in the stadium if it happens to open up this upcoming year. Because Deshaun Watson is a savior, but they need so much since Bill O'Brien just stripped them bare bones. I mean, even having Laremy Tunsil, like, it doesn't really matter right now. They need the two or three first round picks that Watson would bring back in return. So I actually think it would help them long term. It's something they have to do, honestly. But again, they're a bunch of clowns. So will they do it? I have no idea. I have no idea what they're thinking, and I'd prefer not to even try.
Joe, what do you think about the Watson situation? Is John on point there?
Yeah, I mean, it's totally spot on. Like, I couldn't tell you what they're thinking. I haven't been able to figure that out for years, it feels like. And yeah, they 100% should be trading Watson. Will he actually hold out? I don't know. I mean, we've seen that play out before, and it doesn't really work out very well for the players. And Watson's a little bit different than, say, running backs that have held out and, you know, they get a year older, they're not as good. Watson's going to come back and probably still be fine. He'll probably end up playing, hopefully not for the Texans, for his sake and for anybody watching football, because he needs to go to a better team.
Yeah, I agree with both John and Joe. I 100% think he will be traded. Where he goes, he's got a list. He could go to New York. He could go to Miami. I think those are honestly the two front runners. I actually think New York is the front runner to land him. I could see him going to New York. If he ends, as a Dolphins fan, I'm kind of indifferent on this. If he goes to Miami and we give Tua and, you know, two or three draft picks for him, I'm okay with this. If we keep our draft picks and we keep Tua, I'm okay with that as well. But yeah, for sure, I think Watson will be on the move. I don't think he will be playing at all in Texas this year.
All right, and then a guy I think we probably will all think is staying at least this year, Russell Wilson. Now, he's making smoke about he's willing to be traded. He's not happy there. It's probably about the power structure there. He wants some say in the front office. He sees what Tom Brady's doing down in Tampa. He gets to pick his players. What do you guys think about that situation? Do you think Russ has a chance of leaving Seattle this year? And if not this year, maybe next year. And I'm going to go ahead and start with John again.
I thought it was interesting that the most recent report that came out, that long article at The Athletic, actually highlighted how he was tired of essentially the roots and the pillars that Pete Carroll built his coaching foundations on, and that is entrusting his coaching staff. But apparently, according to the report, Carroll plays favorites, in particular with himself, not holding himself accountable and not realizing what's happening within the organization and on offense, and with his sons. His son, of course, is a wide receivers coach, and he was allowed a leave of absence just because he was angry with the team last year. Russell Wilson also, it was reported before that Thursday night game against the Falcons, I believe, actually stormed out of a meeting that he called personally to speak with the coaches about the offense because he wasn't happy with it, and they were just having none of it. And we know that not only is Pete Carroll the oldest coach in the NFL currently, he just got extended this past year to a new 5-year contract through the 2025 season. So if Wilson's like ires are against Carroll, that means that of course he wants out, because Carroll is the one who is, for whatever reason, tied to this organization above Wilson, clearly. Seattle's nothing without Wilson. That's what's funny. Like, I love DK Metcalf, but ultimately, like, the talent, like, DK Metcalf's not the one fighting the coaching staff weekly and dragging the corpse of your organization to the playoffs. It's literally what Wilson does. He's an all-star, and yet people who don't watch the league regularly probably don't even know it, because the Seahawks, outside of their one Super Bowl appearance, really haven't been that relevant because they always run themselves. They can't get out of their own way out of the postseason. So I don't think he'll go anywhere else. He seems like a person who's really just attached to the city overall, and I would hope they build a bridge here, because he's just so important. So yeah, I don't think he's going anywhere, but I would personally love to see him go somewhere else. That would actually appreciate him.
George, does he leave?
I don't think he leaves. I don't think, listen, if I'm the ownership of that franchise, like, I'm getting rid of Pete Carroll. I'm getting rid of any single player, any coach, any GM, anybody on the team not named Russell Wilson. I'm getting rid of all of them. He is the entire franchise at this point, and there's no way that they can get rid of him. It would be the biggest mistake that they could ever make. They're not in the same situation as Houston. Houston needs to trade Watson to rebuild that franchise. The Seahawks have pieces, but without Russell Wilson, they don't have much at all. He is the franchise. So, no, I don't think they do trade him. If they do, I know he's got a list, but that he said he would be willing to go to. I just don't see the Seahawks doing it.
Joe?
Yeah, I don't think they get rid of him either. Whether or not they get rid of Pete Carroll, who knows? That seems like kind of a stretch myself. They brought back some coaching staff that, you know, has worked with Russell Wilson in the past. Carl Smith is one of them. he helped with like in-game management stuff with Russell Wilson. So I don't know, maybe that's a good thing. I haven't read up too much on whether or not the relationship between those two is any good. You know, I've also read that this is about, you know, he wants more. He wants to be able to pass the ball more. He wants to be able to call the plays more and things like that. So I don't, maybe they, you know, sing kumbaya together and, you know, get along after, you know, over the course of the summer, spring and summer here, and they'll figure it out. But I think we're going to see Russell Wilson as a Seahawk.
We're going to move on to not a fantasy related, but NFL superstar related. J.J. Watt confirming he's joining his former Texans teammate DeAndre Hopkins in Arizona. He said having a young quarterback is key to having a winning team. Apparently he slept through this year's Super Bowl. So guys, can we make heads or tails of J.J. Watt wanting to go to a Super Bowl contender and then picking Arizona? I know they have Kyler Murray. I know they have kind of an up and coming team, but do we think that Arizona is one of those teams this year that's going to make a splash and make a run to the Super Bowl? And this time I'm going to start with Joe.
No, they don't. Even with J.J. Watt, I don't think they have the defense. It's, you know, they lost Patrick Peterson, if I recall. I'm sorry, I'm like full deep, neck deep in the baseball mode right now. So football's there, but it's not all there. But yeah, I mean, they lost Patrick Peterson. That's going to be a struggle. They're going to have to reload in the draft, and that's always hit or miss. But I mean, the offense is good, but the defense is not going to keep them in it, even with J.J. Watt there. They're good, unless they bring in some more pieces.
It was only 2 years ago as well that Patrick Peterson was getting consistently burned post PED suspension. He played much better last year, but this is a team that has perennially always struggled in just having one competent corner, let alone a competent secondary. At this stage of his career, like the impact of J.J. Watt was hyperbolized just because the people reporting are the people that eat that stuff up. You know, when he says he wants to go live in a cabin to think about his life, he of course goes to a $1 million cabin. Like it's the type of crap that, like, you know, we don't fall for. We're too I don't know the word, malignant minded. I don't know the word I'm looking for. Either way though, he's a good 1B player. Chandler Jones is clearly the best pass rusher on that team still. I think it's a good fit, honestly, just because, like, let's say Corey Davis with AJ Brown. He's a player with the talent that can be a 1B, but cannot be a 1A at this stage of his career. But the issue is that, again, Watt took the money, and it comes down to Cliff Kingsbury and that offense. Will they evolve? I don't know enough either way. Perhaps Kingsbury has been hiding some things from us. But if it's the same offense as last year, where it literally comes down to Kyler's legs and Hopkins on one side of the field, then no, like, they're not a contender at all. They're not even a scary offense, honestly.
Yeah, so I understand why he went there. He's familiar with their defensive coordinator, Vance Joseph. He talked with DeAndre Hopkins. Obviously, there's a relationship there from their time in Houston together.
The 31 million at 32 years of age will also help a lot.
I mean, I would. Yes, it will. There's a lot I would do for $31 million.
I don't want that list. I don't want that list, George.
I can just say it's a very extensive list, especially if you're giving me $31 million over 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. But one other thing about J.J. Watt is I believe he was the most double teamed player in the NFL last year in the games that he played. So I still think he's got something to him. Having Chandler Jones across from him will help alleviate some of those double teams. I'm not going to say he'll return to form, but I think that will help him play a little bit better than what he did last year. I still think he's got a little bit of gas left in that tank. I think he will be an impact player on that defense. With that said, I still don't see that team making the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it does just go to show a lot of these players, we think, we romanticize that at the end of the day, they want to play for a title. There were several teams here, and we've talked about them to death, that he could have gone to: Buffalo, maybe Cleveland, Tampa, even Green Bay, if he wanted to make a decent run at a title. And really, he just wanted money and good weather.
And we don't have any concerns about, let's say, the top of the division. The 49ers were simply injury and COVID riddled last year. So throw that season out the window. We know the Rams will still be at the top, if not close to the top, because they are always built to compete, especially under Sean McVay, making a deal for a competent quarterback and getting rid of Jared Goff. So yeah, it's also just a tough division overall for the Cardinals to compete, honestly.
Yep.
Absolutely. It is now Irv Smith season. So, Rudolph, why is it just a slam dunk he's going to the Patriots?
Well, to your point, he is the perfect fit. He just seems like that kind of gritty, hardworking guy the Patriots love, especially because he blocks as well. He's not really that big a deal at this stage of his career, to be honest. It's actually a travesty that they didn't get Irv Smith more involved. And the fact that Irv Smith was only running routes on 80+% of Kirk Cousins' dropbacks whenever Rudolph was absent this past year. So yeah, it's a rocket emoji for Irv Smith. That goes without saying. Now probably a top six tight end, honestly, especially for a team that has no defensive players that we think can make an impact. And they'll, again, have no choice but to run the ball at first, but more importantly, be efficient through the air and throw a lot because they'll be behind again unless they do some drastic shakeups in free agency and in the draft. But yeah, for Kyle Rudolph, he's not really someone I'll be chasing, even if he's at the Patriots. We have questions about their quarterback situation, how much they'll throw to tight ends in general. So yeah, Kyle Rudolph, not too worried about. This is more about Irv Smith now becoming a mainstay in dynasty and offseason best ball leagues, as he probably was already.
So Joe, we're not going to make you talk about Rudolph at all. I left that honor to John, but we can talk about Irv Smith here. Now, in the three games that Rudolph was off the field, he had 15 receptions on 20 targets and 3 touchdowns. Where would you rank him knowing he's the tight end one now for the Vikings?
Just
off the top of your head.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm trying to think. Obviously, you know, you've got Kelce, Kittle, Waller. You know, you got Hockenson, Andrews, Fant, those kind of guys up there. I think he's in the Fant, Goddard, you know, Gesicki range, honestly. So he's that 6-7-8 guy. I have no issues putting him ahead of even Fant, just because I don't really trust Drew Lock a lot. I mean, look, we all know Kirk Cousins is Kirk Cousins, but I mean, we've had very good fantasy seasons from receivers and tight ends with Kirk Cousins. We haven't really seen it yet with Drew Lock. So I'd be fine putting him number 6.
George, is that about where you'd rank him to?
Yeah, I'd have him in the 6-8 range. So I'm right there with Joe. Really, what is the difference between the tight end 6 and the tight end 10 or the tight end 12? It's like what? 10 points, 15 points.
3 touchdowns.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really, it's, I mean, not basically. So, I mean, yeah, we'll say he's a top 10 tight end, and we'll go with that.
With that said, we're going to talk a little bit in general about free agency here in a minute. I've been reading that teams are getting frustrated because they have no idea what the cap is going to be set at, and we're right around the corner. You've got teams, you know, like New Orleans, who's supposedly going to be somewhere around $60 million over the cap. So, guys, what do we think free agency is going to be like this year? There's a lot of targets out there. There's a lot of – I mean, the best wide receiver free agency class I can remember in a while, there's a lot of good players out there, but – we think the deals are going to be lowered because of a lower cap and teams can't prepare like they normally do because they have no idea what they can spend. Joe, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think we're going to see, you kind of alluded to it already, like we're going to see a much lower cap than what teams expected because of COVID. And, you know, players are still going to want to get paid. I think it's going to be slow to start out with, and then players are finally just going to realize I still have to go make money and I'm going to sign some contracts for lower than what I wanted. And it'll pick up. I mean, we might see a few splash guys right away. And then I think the meat of it we're pretty slow to get rolling.
We're already seeing what's happening with the Eagles, right? Alshon Jeffrey and Deshaun Jackson cut. That's what's going to happen with the cap number right now.
Yes.
Veterans are going to get sliced in half. It's guys that we know for fantasy don't really make an impact, but for the league, like these are players that matter when you put them on the field and just make competition competitive. But yeah, like guys like that, like let's go to the Saints, for instance. Jared Cook and Emmanuel Sanders are going to get cut. It's just a matter of when, not if. And so players like that that are notable, I would imagine, are not only sliced, but also then are picked up on one-year deals because they're respected around the league. And then they'll go about free agency next year looking at a more longer-term deal. I would imagine we have the numbers and the deal with Amazon, Disney, and yada yada with the league in a couple of weeks, honestly. And so by that time, we'll know how significantly the cap will go up or down for 2021. But overall, given the numbers that are coming out right now, it's just this year we and the players are worried about. Like, beyond this, it's going to be full throttle. The number's not even going to matter. So that's really what they're going to have to waggle through is this year. And once they get through this year, it's going to be just fine in the end. But yeah, I would expect a lot of veterans to get cut this year. That's why I kind of like early best ball drafts right now. Shark-filled waters, of course, because all the shark people who set ADPs are in those leagues and FFPC and underdog. But if you kind of got a gist on the league and you know these older guys who are going to get cut, it makes it a little bit easier and more fun in the later rounds.
So what do we think a 17th game is going to do to this? Because obviously you got to pay these players for another game. You're talking about deals that weren't structured for 17 games. So now players are getting paid a split game check over 17 games, right? Like what is that going to do to this, to the league and to the current deals?
It's going to make me more tired in the end of the year. So it's going to make me.
Yes.
It's going to make my wife hate me 1 week longer.
Exactly. Everyone in the industry knows the last month of the season is always the hardest, not only because you have the excess weight and whatnot you put on, but just like it's winter at that time, the holidays are around and yet your friends and family are doing things, but you're still stuck at your computer. Like you have to work throughout all of that. I mean, I've written back-to-back years now, week 16 waiver wires on Christmas Eve. That's insane. It just has to be done, though. And so now adding another game to that, I mean, give me a break. Get me out of this.
Absolutely. And you know what? It felt even longer this year with COVID, didn't it?
Like,
It was just so much more work, you know, especially for if you weren't just in leagues, but you were commissioner of leagues, and then you had people questioning whether or not they could substitute in a player for a game that might or might not be playing. It took fantasy football, which is something I love, and made it a job. And I always thought that would be awesome until it wasn't.
This year, especially like in the past, you could tune in on Saturday, show up on Sunday, wake up, make your lineups, do whatever you do, and you'd be just fine. But this year, if you didn't pay attention on Saturday, like you were already lost by the time you woke up on Sunday and tried to finagle everything you had already done. I didn't even set, like I set on Thursdays, but then I reset on Sunday mornings because there was no point in looking at anything on Friday and Saturday because everything was just wild.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a season I hope we never have to happen again.
And it's probably going to be the same this year. Not to bring you down, but yeah.
I don't think it'll be that bad.
A combine, I don't think we're going to get a preseason. I think you should be preparing for the worst.
Listen, I'm blaming John if this happens again.
I don't want it to happen.
I was already on the way out, but I'm blaming John. All right, guys, we are going to talk about the free agents. The top 10 free agents in this class. But first, I want to talk about our Patreon. We have a contest going on. If you want to win a signed Chris Godwin or Kenny Galladay jersey, once we reach 100 patrons on Patreon, at patreon.com/sleeperwire, we'll randomly pick one person, announce them on the show. They'll get their choice of the jersey. Even $1 tier gets you in, so check out patreon.com/sleeperwire and get into the contest. We're about to talk about free agency, you know, talking about this contest, that Kennedy Galladay jersey is soon to be a throwback.
Yes, it is.
All right, so we're going to get into the top 10 free agents, and we don't have to dig too deep in here. We've probably talked about these guys a bunch. I know you guys have probably talked to these guys about these guys a bunch. So the first guy I have on my list, and I'm going to start with Joe, Dak Prescott, leaving, staying, what's your take?
He's staying. Dallas will figure this out. There's no way they're going to let Dak walk. I mean, this is everybody flexing their muscle. And, you know, this is what seems to happen with Dallas and their stars lately. They all flex muscle. They're like, oh, nope, I'm leaving. You're not going to get your money or whatever. And then they end up figuring it out. So Dak will be there.
John, as it pertains to contracts and getting the most of them and getting value, we know Dallas is arguably the worst organization in the entire league. They don't care. Deadlines make deals. They have no idea how to do business. They pack stadiums. They do business really well in selling jerseys. Their marketers, Jerry Jones, is genuinely a brilliant mogul. But when it comes to football, they have no clue, and it always shows. Thus, a deal will get done. I don't know if it'll be a long-term deal, because again, they're arguing over pennies. This franchise is valued second most lucrative on Forbes this year, and yet they're arguing over $2 to $3 million difference. It's ridiculous. So if it's a tag again, a second straight tag, Dak will get 40 to 42 million and be just happy with it. I know he wants the comfort, but again, if he's getting 41 million after like he shattered his leg on national television, then he's going to be comfortable. He's going to be just fine. And then honestly, if it doesn't get done here in the next week, because that's the deadline, March 9th, I believe, we're looking at a third consecutive tag, which will go up to 54 million. And again, that would not shock me because this team has no idea what they're doing. So either way, Dak will be in Dallas. It's just a matter of how much money he'll be spending around the town more than anything.
All right. So the next guy I've got on this list is from my team, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Chris Godwin. Chris Godwin staying, Chris Godwin going. John?
I would imagine he's staying. I mean, this organization prior to this past year, prior to bringing on Tom Brady, which obviously cured all, was just so awful, and they finally got it right. Actually, I don't know if y'all saw this stat. This past weekend, when the Timberwolves lost, they became the losingest franchise in any of the four major sports. Prior to that loss, though, this weekend, overall, and just in terms of wins and losses, no championships or postseasons or anything, it was the Bucks who had been the worst team ever, going back the last decade, I believe. And so, like, they've just been piss poor. They got it right, and I would imagine that helps them bring back a lot of the pieces that they got right, since they finally did something correct, and they just don't know any other way but to retrace those steps. So I would imagine that brings back Godwin on a long-term deal. Doesn't sound like they're going to tag him. I think Antonio Brown would also end up there on a one-year, two-year deal, also because no one wants the headache of taking on Antonio Brown, except for Tom Brady and Bruce Arians, who will do anything Tom Brady says. And so, yeah, I think a lot of the Bucs free agents are going to be returning for that reason.
So before I get over to Joe, I do want to mention, I think it might be over the last decades that Timberwolves took over. I think the Bucs, it's like franchise long, have the lowest win percentage of any franchise in all of sports. There's a stat, and I'm going to get it wrong, but I think they could go 10-6 for the next 30 years. And then it would take them like 31 seasons to break even. Oof. 50-50 as a, like, literally would have to go 10-6 for some, like, odd, wow, ungodly number of years.
Jason Light and the family that owns the organization, like, people don't realize they were awful. Like, it's amazing how one year erased all of that just poor managing. But yeah, they have been completely miserable, and Tom Brady changed it all.
So Joe, Chris Godwin staying or going?
I think he stays. He's probably going to get franchise tagged, if anything. But if he doesn't, I think one place to look at for him as a landing spot would be Miami.
I don't like it because I like the Bucks, but that's a good spot.
Yeah.
So we're going to move on to Allen Robinson. And I've heard rumors of him getting tagged as well. So Joe, do you think he gets tagged? Do you think he moves on?
I do. I think honestly that a lot of these receivers are going to get tagged. It's going to be the recurring theme of our answers here, but just to put it out there, a team that may be looking to get a receiver one, a real one, is Baltimore.
I think the Bears tag him as well, but also because they don't know what they're doing. It's very clear in bringing back Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace. They're just out of ideas. They genuinely just have no direction and don't know what to do. So yeah, I just think they bring back Allen Robinson, even though I'm not sure if they even want to bring him back. I know he doesn't want to go back, but I genuinely just don't think they even understand they have another course of direction and can change it up. So I think he'll get tagged just for the hell of it, because they don't know what else to do.
We're going to keep rolling with wide receivers. Like I said earlier, it's just a free agent class of wide receivers. Kenny Golladay for Detroit. Now, he's a guy I can almost guarantee. I say guarantee, but I believe he's going to leave. So Kenny Golladay, is he staying or is he going?
I would think Kenny Golladay is staying, which is bad for Kenny Golladay. Yes. With Jared Goff, a poor offensive line, a team rebuilding. I know everyone... Well, first of all, we all reacted accordingly and appropriately, in my opinion, to the Dan Campbell press conference and the kneecaps and everything else he says. He's pretty much just younger Dave Gettleman at this point. But I will say that it's bad news, because the one thing he said about DeAndre Swift moving to the slot, he spoke some things about the offense. The fact is, like, Dan Campbell doesn't have a say over the offense. Dan Campbell's not an offensive-minded person. So it doesn't matter his opinions on the offense in these press conferences. Unfortunately, that duty falls to Anthony Lynn. And who do we trust less than anyone else after last year? It's Anthony Lynn. So I think it's an absolute disaster that Kenny Golladay, one of my favorite players to watch in the league, is, yeah, basically doomed to return to Detroit.
Joe, do you think so? And if not, let's pick a good landing spot for our friend Kenny.
Oh man. Yeah, I think like John said, unfortunately, I think he's sticking around. They're going to franchise tag him. I mean, a good landing spot for him,
Philadelphia. You know,
how about maybe the Colts?
Yeah, you know, that's one that I have written down. I do like him potentially there, although it's still question marks about Wentz in general. So who knows? I mean, you know, you could see him going to Miami or something like that. You know, they bring in, you know, if they keep Tua, like that could be a big boost for him as well. I just don't think, unfortunately, for wide receivers, there's not a lot of great landing spots as far as, you know, needy teams and that have good quarterbacks as well. The teams that seem to have good quarterbacks have good wide receivers surrounding them. So, you know, unless he's just going to go to another team and be like the 1B, but I don't know if that's really a good landing spot.
You know, so I was going to move on to number five on my list, but I disagree with the order that my my partner in crime here put him in. I'm gonna put a little respect on Aaron. I'm gonna put a little respect on Aaron Jones's name and move him up to number five. And we're gonna say Aaron Jones number five. I feel like they're going to cut Aaron Jones or let Aaron Jones move on out of Green Bay. They drafted running back last year, and they really seem to hate Aaron Rodgers. So they get rid of everything that he loves. John, why do they kill everything that Aaron Rodgers loves?
I don't know. And, you know, maybe they believe that Aaron Jones' body type couldn't handle a workhorse role, and that's why he was always splitting with Jamal Williams the past 2 years. But the fact is, Jamal Williams is also a free agent. That's one of the more underreported news of the offseason. So they're going to have to make a decision on one. They aren't, as a team that has preached committee ever since LaFleur took over 2 years ago, we know they're just not going to run to the season with Aaron Jones and like calling up Dexter Williams at the practice squad. So I think they also let Aaron Jones walk. I don't have a suitor. Maybe someone else has a dream spot picked out for him. But I do genuinely think they would have gotten a deal done by now because they started negotiating last September if they were to actually re-sign him.
Joe, your thoughts on a landing spot?
Yeah, I mean, some places that need running backs. Obviously, Atlanta's a good spot. He could really thrive there. You know, the Bills have been talked about, you know, possibly going out and getting a running back. And then Miami's up there, too. I mean, Miami needs bodies back there as well. So those are three spots that I like.
You know, that's the first time I'd heard Atlanta, and it just makes too much sense for it to actually happen, but I really kind of like it. You know, as a fantasy community, we hope for these things to happen, and then Aaron Jones will end up on the Rams. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I just feel like we're going to be set up for a letdown for an Aaron Jones, you know, running back workhorse role. I'm going to actually put Juju Smith-Schuster as six, and we're going to keep sliding Will Fuller down the board. Juju Smith-Schuster is next. Do you think he tests free agency? You think he's just going to try and get back into Pittsburgh and beg Ben to stick around a little bit longer? What are we doing with Juju Smith-Schuster, Joe?
I think he's walking. You know, even with kind of talk and rumors that Ben's coming back this year, even though he's got a ridiculous contract. I think he's walking. All the signs are pointing that he's going to go elsewhere. And I've heard and read a lot about it being the Jets, which wouldn't be good, but he's, for some reason, that seems to be a spot that keeps popping up for him.
So, John, does Juju Smith-Schuster take the Lev Bell route and go to the Jets?
I don't know about the Jets. I mean, it doesn't really make sense as a thing. I agree there has been news on him, so yes, that's a good point. But, like, the fit is just illogical because they still have Jameson Crowder. You know, Breshad Perriman is the one who's a free agent, not an outside boundary receiver, not one from the slot where Juju Smith-Schuster primarily plays. I've also seen him linked to the Raiders, which I think is actually a much better fit, especially since Nelson Agholor is a free agent. Although if Nelson Agholor re-signs with the Raiders, that'd also be good because for whatever reason, he showed terrific rapport quietly with Derek Carr. So that's someone also to watch. But yeah, Juju Smith-Schuster is a slot receiver, and Las Vegas. I think that's great because Derek Carr, as we know, won't go deep. He'll dump down to Juju, which would be good, which is where he ran most of his routes with a shallow A dot last year. And Pittsburgh has pretty much already told us that he's not coming back. I mean, they have had no interest since last offseason and even trying to re-sign him or negotiate with him. So I imagine he's going elsewhere.
All right. So at this point, I guess I have to bring up Will Fuller. With Deshaun Watson probably taking his last snap, Will Fuller probably also wants out of Texas, because who doesn't want out of Texas? I mean, even Ted Cruz wanted out of Texas. So, like, you know, everybody wanted out of Texas. So, John, where do you think Will Fuller ends up this offseason?
I genuinely don't know. Green Bay, again, is the – maybe it's not rumor, but it's the dream spot to play with. Aaron Rodgers, of course, will the Packers blow money on a wide receiver? I doubt it, especially considering they wouldn't even blow a draft pick on a wide receiver. So I think the Texans still may try to work out a long-term deal. They've already said they're not going to give him the tag, which is an interesting concept already, especially because Deshaun Watson, like, for defying him and not listening to him at all, like, one of the things he said, of course, was that, one, last year Will Fuller's not getting traded, and two, that he wants Will Fuller back. So who knows what they're going to do, but I'm still going to put him back in with the Texans on a long-term deal, unfortunately.
Joe, you there with John?
Yeah, I've either got him going back as a franchise, or he'll sign something, you know, 3-4 years, I'm guessing.
Okay. I feel bad for him. He's going to be the one guy that actually stays in Texas and has to deal with that frigid cold weather. So the guy we have in the eighth slot, he's a guy I've been way too high on for way too long. And he's actually a guy, and I'm just going to throw it out there, he's a guy I'd love to see play with Aaron Rodgers. I don't think they do it, but the next guy on our list is Corey Davis. Joe, where's a good landing spot for Corey Davis, assuming he leaves?
That's actually what I've got written down as Green Bay. I think Corey Davis is a number two receiver. He is not. We've seen him try to be the number one. It didn't work. They brought in AJ Brown, and Corey Davis's career was revived, or started, you can say, because it wasn't anything before that. And you know, I've been a Corey Davis hater for a long time because it just never happened. And this year I actually had him on a couple of my teams because, well, he was probably one of the most consistent players all year long, to be frank. And he was constantly in my DFS lineups. But yeah, I think Green Bay is a fantastic landing spot for him. And, you know, he can sit right on the other side of the field from Devontae Adams and just, you know, collect everything that doesn't go his way, which is what, 30% of Aaron Rodgers' passes?
Completely agree. It's a dream spot because we know that he's not an alpha. He's not a 1A. AJ Brown helped him get open more, and Corey Davis was then a more successful player. And across from Devontae Adams, that'd be amazing as long as Aaron Rodgers trusts him. So ideally, a fit like that where he can play opposite a much better wideout is, yeah, an ideal one.
All right, so number nine, we touched on a little bit already. So if we want to just say he's staying in Tampa, we can do that. Antonio Brown is our number nine.
Tampa. He's not going anywhere.
Yeah, Pete Carroll and the Seahawks were linked to him before he signed with the Bucks last year. But why would anyone else trust him? And more importantly, why would he go anywhere else except where Tom Brady goes? Even if it's just a one-year veteran deal, I think he'd take it.
Plus, he's living at Tom's house. I don't think Tom's moving to Seattle.
Correct.
So... and number 10, the second wide receiver on this list, only the second running back on this list, which is kind of amazing. We've got Chris Carson. John, let's close this out. Chris Carson, where's Chris Carson going this offseason?
I definitely don't think he's returning to Seattle. They still have Rashad Penny with high draft capital. They have DG Dallas, who proved well in his one lone start. It was one game sample, small sample, of course, but proved to be a really good player in his one game start, and also a terrific pass catcher, as we knew he was, considering he was a converted wide receiver at the U. And so I just don't think they have any interest in re-signing Chris Carson. I think he's run his course, especially with how many carries and how oft injured he was with that organization the past 3 or 4 years. And I just think he's going to honestly end up in an unappealing committee elsewhere. I don't know if he'll be signed anywhere to be actually a true workhorse like he was in Seattle.
Yeah, I think just to add to one tidbit of why he's not coming back, I've heard Seattle link to Mike bringing back Mike Davis too. They seem to take a liking to him too. So just to come in and help there. You know, ideal landing spots again. Atlanta is probably the premier spot for any running back if Atlanta wants to go that route. The Jets and the Bills are kind of spots where I could see Chris Carson landing, which are okay, but not fantastic, because, you know, the Bills just don't really seem like they want to run a lot right now. And why would they?
Absolutely. All right. So that ends our free agent segment. Like, I've got a couple guys down here. If anybody really wants to talk about them, we've got Marvin Jones, Cam Newton, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Andy Dalton to round out the top 15. But you know, other than Marvin Jones there, I think he's probably the only guy that he's probably walking. But again, quarterback needy or wide receiver needy teams, the Colts, maybe the Dolphins, that kind of thing.
I will say this about the two quarterbacks, though. I bet Washington snags one of those guys. They killed themselves they killed themselves by winning the division, actually. It hurt them so much in draft stock this year by winning this division and being a terrible football team in general, but not having a good quarterback. They could desperately use just a average warm body back there, since they're basically, from what I understand, they're letting Alex Smith go.
Yeah, and Heinicke played, it was one game, it was the postseason against the Super Bowl champions. Heinicke played really well in that game, though.
He did.
They re-signed him to a two-year deal, but go ahead.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, to at least bring in somebody.
Absolutely.
You know, who's got more experience. You know, I I'm a ex-Washington fan. I don't really root for him anymore. I just can't root for Dan Snyder. I want him gone. But they're still in my heart. It's if they want to compete at all, they're going to have to bring in somebody. Heinicke's not going to do it. It's going to be something holding back this team for a long time until they figure it out.
I don't know if it helps them win.
I don't think it will either.
But I'm saying that I think Cam Newton makes a lot of sense there. You know, we've already seen how Ron Rivera runs the organization. Yep. He just brings in his close friends. They have become the Washington Panthers from the coaching staff on down to the players. And so to just bring back Cam Newton as well, honestly makes a lot of sense for a team that does need at least competition at that position.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. So with that, we are out of the free agents, and we're going to move into our sophomore class. We're hoping not for a sophomore slump with these guys. We're going to do a segment called Too High, Too Low, or Just Right. It's the Goldilocks of fantasy football, if you will. So we've got players from each position, not in order of rankings, but we're gonna look at how many points per game they had last season per game played. We're going to decide if they're going to be ranked higher this year, lower this year, or about the same. And we're going to start always with quarterbacks, because the NFL is about quarterbacks. And we're going to start with Joe Burrow. Last year, he was 17. He was QB 17 with a points per game basis. His average was 17.4 points per game, and he started 10 games. And I haven't heard from George in a while, because, you know, I let the guests talk about the free agent. So I'm going to start with George. Is Joe Burrow too high, too low, or just right?
Finishing QB 17, I think he's going to finish higher than that this coming season. The one caveat I has is if they don't put him on the PUP list to start the season. If he starts the season on the PUP list, there's no way he'll finish higher than QB 17.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, because we are getting influx of at least two more starting rushing quarterbacks, likely three, because Zach Wilson also quietly averaged, I believe, over seven carries per game at BYU in his final year. It's just going to depend if he starts or not. So, you know, when we add rushing quarterbacks to the equation, it makes it harder. The difference is Joe Burrow was also a rushing quarterback and led the league in dropbacks when he was under center. Also, we get rid of John Ross from that team. We get basically an extra two games from T. Higgins, since he wasn't a starter in weeks one and two behind John Ross. So it's close. I guess I'll have to say higher, because I'm pinning Joe Burrow in my head right now as QB 15 overall. So I'll say higher.
Joe?
Yeah, I've got him higher too. I just think he's going to take a step up. But he looked good last season in his time there, and he had some real nice games. I've actually got him just currently I have him inside the top 10 or inside the top 12, but he could literally fall anywhere between that like 11 and 14 range, and it's probably right.
We're going to move on to Tua. You know what? I forgot how to pronounce that. We're in the off season. I forgot how to pronounce his last name. I'm just going to say Tua because that's what everybody says. He finished QB 30 last year on a points per game basis, averaged 13.5 points per game. Now, I don't know if you guys know this, but George is a Miami Dolphin fan. So I'm going to let him say whether he finishes better than 30th, because I feel like he's going to say better. Although my eye test says he's right on average.
I'm going to say he finishes in the top five. No, I'm just kidding. Not top five. no, I think he'll finish higher than QB 30. I think he'll be in the high teens to low 20 range. Yep. They have to get him some weapons on that team. They had nothing last year for him to throw the ball to. That their running game was pretty putrid for the most part when Gaskins wasn't available. So, assuming that they add some offensive firepower to this team, I'll say he's going to finish higher than QB 30. I think he'll be high teens, low 20s.
Everyone is so obsessed of finding out whether he's a bust or not. I don't know, but I do know he played like an injured rookie who didn't get offseason reps, and it's as simple as that. So we don't know either way. There were two games there. The game before the Chiefs standoff, and then that Chiefs game where they ran more no huddle. And he was very successful from no huddle, from under center. So it'll be interesting to see if they play him more like that, if he's not traded. But overall, I'm going to say higher. He has rushing juice as well. We genuinely don't know anything about his career. You can pretty much hold on to the rookie evaluations you had of him because we learned nothing last year.
So one guy we learned a whole lot about was Justin Herbert. He came into the league last year kind of as the third or fourth guy talked about in the offseason. Somebody we thought would sit behind Tyrod Taylor, but he ended up QB 8 on a point per game basis, averaged 22.2 fantasy points. He won a lot of people, a lot of games last year. So QB 8, you know, you're in top 10. Do you see a higher ceiling than QB 8 for him? Joe, you want to start with that one?
A higher ceiling? No, I think he kind of finishes right around there. I've currently got him 9th because, you know, I'm guessing you're not adding Dak to that list. And I think once Dak gets thrown into the mix, he jumps above him. But pretty much everybody that finished above him this year is probably going to finish above him next year. And then you add Dak to it. So I've got him 9th. So I guess, I don't know, stay the same if you want to call it that.
Stay the same is probably the safer play. I'm going to go higher just because I think he should be around QB 6. It's really tough to get in that top 5 with the guys who just run or have the elite arms in the league. But as a rookie with Anthony Lynn, to still finish in that range in fantasy points per game is heroic. Like, that's a mighty effort. And the fact that they overhauled their coaching staff with competence as opposed to what they had last year is just a tremendous upgrade. I mean, I have all the respect in the world for Brandon Staley. Of course, a college quarterback who was a defensive coordinator of the NFL who runs his defense like chess pieces because he understands offenses. He, of course, will be handing those play calling duties off to Joe Lombardi, who has worked under Sean Payton of late. Before getting hired with the Chargers. And so, yeah, I already think their offense is going to be 10 times better than it was last year. And they were already elite because Justin Herbert is an elite proven player already in the league. So I'll go higher. Again, maybe not by much, but 5 or 6 overall.
All right. So, George, are you going higher? It sounds like John thinks he's Superman with the way he handled the coaching staff last year.
I'm going to say he's going to finish right about where he's at. I'll go. He's going to finish as QB 9. I think adding Dak to the scenario, Dak's going to be a top 5 quarterback again this year. So I'm gonna bump Herbert back one spot, put him at QB 9.
All right, we're going from Superman to the clipboard holder, Jordan Love. We're year after year they draft guys that don't play. They don't get out on the field. They can't help the team out. Jordan Love's another example of that. I've got to assume we're all just going to say, I mean, if he finishes with a couple of snaps, I guess that's better than last year, so you can say higher. But I assume we're all going to say he's going to finish the same as he did last year. Jordan Love. John, go ahead.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe he's a low dynasty buy low because Aaron Rodgers is probably, you know, 1-2 years out. But is it this offseason? I don't think so. So same spot.
John, same thing. Or Joe, same thing. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just realized you probably meant me.
Yeah.
I mean, unless they get totally crazy and Aaron Rodgers gets traded or something, which would be absolutely just crazy. But yeah, he's not doing anything.
You know, I keep trying to speak this into existence, but I feel like Tom Brady's got a year or two left. He's going to retire. Then we're going to move right into the Aaron Rodgers era of Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So if you guys could just keep spreading that love for me, I'd appreciate it. George, Jordan Love staying on the bench.
Yeah, he's outside of my top 35 quarterbacks next season. We'll just leave it at that.
And the last one, a surprise starter for parts of the year last year, Jalen Hurts, 23 points per game in games he started, the final four games. His average would be right around the same as Justin Herbert at QB8. But, man, that seems awful high to me. We're going to let Joe start with that. QB8, high, low, or right about the same?
I think he's lower. I still think he's a top 12 guy. He's number 12 for me currently. You know, the rushing floor he's going to give you is just going to be insane. But I do think, you know, teams will be able to get a little more tape on him and be able to figure him out a little bit more. And, you know, he's not going to be able to hurt them passing the ball as much as he did last year, even though it wasn't all that much. I think it's going to be, you know, that's going to keep his stock down a little bit, but he's still going to be a very valuable quarterback, and especially DFS. He's going to be monster in DFS some weeks.
I have him as the QB10 overall currently, but it's very volatile.
Yeah.
Arm talent is obviously a major question because he wasn't efficient at all last year. He just threw the ball deeper at a much higher rate than Carson Wentz did, launching it downfield. And then you mix in the double-digit carries per game, then, yeah, he's a fantasy stud. But, again, they could also draft a quarterback number 6 overall, which I'm not putting past this organization. So right now, yeah, again, QB10, superstar if he's on the field for a full season, but I still think a little lower.
George?
Yeah, I've got him inside the top 12. I've got him at number 11. I think giving a full season, we're going to get to see exactly what this kid is made of. I liked him coming out of college. Jason, as you know, when we were doing our rookie previews last year, I was high on Hurts. I absolutely liked him coming out. I thought his toughness was there. His ability to play on the field was there. But I think I'm just concerned about that Eagles offense. They've got nothing as far as receivers. It's just going to be a lot of running and a lot of screens and to the tight end and to the running back. It's going to be difficult for him to get there. His rushing floor is what's going to save him, but he's not going to finish it at the number 8. He'll be definitely outside that.
All right, so quarterbacks out of the way, we're going to move into the running backs. Drafted as the first running back off the board, offseason darling, he went to the Chiefs, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 12 points per game, ended up being running back 18. Guys, is that his floor or his ceiling, running back 18? We're going to start with Joe.
I've actually got him currently 19. He just didn't show enough for me this year. There wasn't enough power. And honestly, they didn't really use him as much as I think people were really hoping, especially in the passing game. You know, there's just a lot of guys that I like more than him. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I would say about him.
It's, you know,
not sexy, man. I just don't like it.
Going into the offseason, he was ranked probably the 4th or 5th running back to be taken off the board.
But, I didn't get him anywhere because of that. No chance.
You know, there was just like, I meant for the NFL, draft. Like he was ranked behind Jonathan Taylor. He's ranked behind DeAndre Swift. He was ranked behind J.K. Dobbins. And a lot of people had him behind Cam Akers as well. And I was seeing like a 3rd round draft grade. So when the Chiefs went up and got him at 32, a lot of people said, well, they know they're smart. They're good at offense. They know something the rest of us don't. But it turns out, maybe they just picked the wrong guy. Is that what you think, John?
I think so, yeah. Damian Williams returning this year also takes Edwards-Helaire's value down because Damian Williams is a proven pass catcher with Patrick Mahomes under center, and I think that's the role they would give him in a timeshare. So I'll say I'm the same for CEH, but it would not shock me at all if he's actually lower.
And George, your hate for Clyde Edwards-Helaire is well documented. So how do you want to do that?
As Ray Garvin would say, I have the receipts. I was not a big fan of CEH coming out. I didn't get it. He was not in my top 5 running backs coming out. I had him at number six. The landing spot was great, but what did they do midseason? They went out and they brought in Le'Veon Bell because they didn't like what they were getting from CEH. Love the fact that John brought up the return of Damian Williams. I honestly believe if Damian Williams was there all last year and he decided not to opt out for COVID, I think he would have been the RB1 on this team and it would not have been close. I'm going to put Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I'm going to leave him at 18 because I think there is some opportunity in that offense. But that's a guy that I'm glad I own absolutely zero shares of.
We're going to move into our second running back here, DeAndre Swift. Running back 20 last year, 12.8 points per game, kind of came on at the end of the season. Lots of high hopes for DeAndre Swift coming into this season. He's one of the offseason darlings. John, what are your thoughts about DeAndre Swift going into this season?
He's going to put the notion of bad touches to the test because he's going to get all the touches he can handle, even though I guess it wouldn't shock me if this organization, which is already making dumbfounded decisions this offseason, brings back Adrian Peterson. But if Peterson stays out the picture, DeAndre Swift's going to get all that he can handle in one of the worst offenses in the league. We can already paint the picture right now. And so it's going to put to the test how much your touches really matter. Still very explosive, still hopefully catching passes for Jared Goff, who will also be under pressure, very shaky under pressure, as we know historically, and we'll just dump the ball off to him as well. So I think he'll be like much better David Montgomery, like David Montgomery of the last five games where he actually was explosive, that for the regular season. So I guess I'll say higher, but again, this offense is going to be one of the worst in the league, so it's questionable.
So, Joe, are you taking DeAndre Montgomery here? Because I if you tell me I'm getting last five games David Montgomery out of DeAndre Swift, I'm taking that all the time. So, Joe, you on that bandwagon too?
I don't think you're going to get the last five games from him, but I do think you're going to get better than the overall last year. Again, the volume is going to be key for him. He's going to get tons of it. Unless the Lions go out and do something crazy, but you know, we've seen dumber things from this organization. You know, he's going to get all the checkdowns from Goff to where Stafford didn't really do a lot of that. So that's going to just help him. I actually had him rated as a higher running back than Jonathan Taylor coming into last season. You know, those last five games, you know, maybe Taylor's obviously rated higher now, but I really liked Swift and the landing spot was, I thought, great for him. And I still think it is. He's going to get tons of volume and volume plays for running backs, even if it's bad.
No, he's going to finish much higher than where he was at the end of last year. I'm really curious what would have happened if he'd have caught that ball in the end zone week one against the Bears to win the game. I feel like after he dropped that wide open pass, he went into Matt Patricia's doghouse. They got rid of the coaching staff last year. They brought in Anthony Lynn from the Chargers, and we've seen how he used Austin Eckler. I think they're going to do the same thing with DeAndre Swift. So I've got him inside right now. I've got him at running back 11.
All right, top 12. So you mentioned him a minute ago, George. We're going to talk about Jonathan Taylor, 15.7 points per game, running back 7 on a point per game basis. Like, he skyrocketed at the end of the season last year. They finally started using him. You know, they finally started using him like we all wanted them to at the beginning of the season, and he showed off he has the goods. So, Jonathan Taylor, is he going straight to the moon, or is his lack of catching ability still going to hinder him from being a top five guy?
I think it's to the moon. Entrusted over Nyheim Hines and Indianapolis' last six regular season games for an average 20 carries and 22 touches per contest in that span, including that 30 carry week 17 must win game against Jacksonville to sneak into the postseason. During that stretch, broke much more tackles at a much higher rate. And honestly, the biggest knock against him coming out of Wisconsin was his hands, and his hands were more than efficient. He caught 14 to 16 targets. So overall, there's literally nothing to shy away from Taylor about in his second year, especially because he figured out the downside and whatever problems existed in the first half of the year.
Yeah, I'm all in on Jonathan Taylor. I've got him at the top six back right now. Honestly, you could put him at the top five. You know, he is a monster, and he's just proven the last, you know, half of the season how good this guy can be, and I think he can be even better in a full season.
And George?
I'll keep it short. I'll keep it sweet. He's going to finish as the RB5.
All right. Another guy who finished the season strong but didn't have a great season overall, Cam Akers, 7.4 points per game, running back 49. Now, he dealt with Malcolm Brown, Daryl Henderson, but are they going to make Todd Gurley out of Cam Akers, Joe? I feel like he isn't Gurley, but, man, if they gave him some of that usage, he could be pretty damn good.
I've got Akers at 18, so obviously he's going to finish higher than he did last year on a per-game basis. But, you know, I still worry about the fact that McVay just feels like he needs to use a committee approach to some degree. And, I mean, hopefully Akers, you know, proved to him that he doesn't need to. And, you know, they did it the last four games. Well, four out of five, the last five games of the season, he missed the one. But I don't totally trust McVay to do it. Plus, with Stafford there, maybe they can now rely a little more on the pass than with Goff there. They had to rely a lot more on the run. So there's a little bit of a negative for him.
So,
but he's still going to be better.
I actually, oddly enough, do trust McVay, because I think the timeline of how Akers' season happened makes sense. We forget that he actually opened as the starter in week one. He suffered a serious rib injury, and then he struggled to get back healthy. And meanwhile, Daryl Henderson was just running great. Like, Daryl Henderson was playing so amazing before he himself got injured. Thus, then they went through this couple period of games where they couldn't move the ball at all. And then in week 12, I believe, Cam Akers had that explosive 61-yard run in the third quarter.
Yes.
And like had three carries in that drive to open the second half and scored a touchdown. And he was basically the only thing they had on offense. And from that quarter on, if you look at the splits, that's when he exploded the rest of the season. They didn't worry about Henderson or Malcolm Brown, who is a free agent, by the way, this year. They strictly just leaned on Cam Akers, including in the postseason, for 20-point carries a game and over 5 yards per touch in that stretch. So, yeah, I think it's Cam Akers to the moon. And if people in your league are concerned that, oh, it's McVay being McVay, like, you should just soak up all the acre shares you can, because I think it actually makes a lot of sense of what happened last year.
I mean, 49 is criminally low. Like, it's a slam dunk over just if he shows up on the field. George, talk to me about what Stafford does for Cam Akers and opening up the box a little bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, did Jared Goff really scare anybody deep? No. So he'll Matthew Stafford, on the other hand, he'll throw the ball deep. He'll open up that offense. You're not going to be able to stack eight in the box against Matt Stafford like you could at times with Jared Goff. That's just going to open up more running lanes. It's going to put the defense back on its heels a little bit more. The play action pass is going to be a huge thing with this team. I agree. Clearly, Cam Akers is going to finish better than RB49. Looking at my rankings right now, just because I am a little concerned about Henderson, I could see them doing a complete committee here, because both running backs at times look absolutely amazing. I've got Cam Akers at 16.
All right, 16 I think is fair. Now we're going to jump into J.K. Dobbins. Dobbins was a favorite in the offseason last year, ended up at the Ravens. He ended up as RB28, 10.6 points per game. So, John, tell me why Dobbins is better this year than he was last year at RB28.
He'll be better because Mark Ingram's gone. So it is a two-headed backfield. Even when they were healthy scratching Ingram, they didn't get Justice Hill involved whatsoever. Gus Edwards is an exclusive rights free agent, but the fact is Gus Edwards is good. Like, he's really good at football. Mm-hmm. And so I know people wanted J.K. Dobbins unleashed, but genuinely they can't, because Gus Edwards is too good when he's on the field. So I'm fine if it's a two-headed backfield, which is what I imagine it is, because that's exactly what they showed us, not only in the postseason, but over the second half of the regular season last year, that it is Dobbins and Edwards. Thus, they are both top 24, top 20 running backs, maybe. also because we know that neither of them have pass catching equity. Lamar doesn't check down. They will not scheme targets to their running backs. So they'll finish with, 12 or fewer than that targets in the regular season, which also limits their upside. But overall, both elite running backs.
Right now, look at the rankings. I got him at RB 15. And the only reason I can't put him much higher than that is because when it gets in close, I'm worried about Lamar taking off and just doing it himself. He is the absolute best running back on that team. Just happens to also be the quarterback on that team. So I'm concerned about the opportunities that Dobbins is going to be able to see. I love the fact that John brought up Gus Edwards. Gus Edwards, people hated him last year. Why are they letting him play? Why they keep giving him the ball? They keep giving him the ball because he's really freaking good. It's just he's good. They've got two really good running backs, and they've got a quarterback who runs for over 1,000 yards, which is going to limit the opportunities that I think Dobbins will get. So I can't put him much higher, but he's clearly going to finish higher than RB 28.
We create these infinite uncapped ceilings in our minds with rookies because we don't know their potential. Thus, we assume their potential is the sky. And that could be the case for Dobbins, but the fact is that, like, Gus Edwards wasn't dusty or a slouch. Gus Edwards was great anytime he touched the football. So they had to keep getting involved on the ground because he's one of the league's most elite pure running backs. And so a two-headed timeshare is genuinely one of the best timeshares in all of football between those two.
So, Joe, rank the running backs in this in order: J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards, Lamar Jackson.
That's not fair. I'm going Lamar because he throws also. No, if you're talking pure running ability, it's probably Lamar, Dobbins, Edwards. I mean, Lamar's just electric, man. He just runs away from people and makes them look silly. But no, I do like Dobbins this year. I do have him at 15 also. Yeah. I mean, the fact that they're cutting bait with the old man there finally. But the one thing, George, you brought up that, when they get in close, you're afraid Lamar's is going to take it in. I think that's where I think that's where Dobbins thrives. I think that's where you hope they get tackled within the 5 yard line, and then they're just going to hand it off to Dobbins because he's only going to get like a dozen, maybe a few more touches than that a game, most likely. So he kind of needs that touchdown equity to score and give you the fantasy points you expect from him. Cause otherwise, yeah, because they've got Edwards and Lamar and Dobbins all sharing the running attack, he's going to be rare when he gets a lot of 100-yard games, I think.
Real quick, Jason. So I've got Dobbins down right now for 7 touchdowns coming into the 2021 season. I think his touchdown upside is limited for the reasons I mentioned with Lamar. Plus, you do got Gus Edwards. I can't give him
he scored 9 touchdowns last year and he played half a year, it felt like.
I tend to agree. I think the worry about a running quarterback taking touchdowns is stronger in Buffalo. It looks to me last year at times that they were actually trying to get the running backs involved around the goal line. I can see it getting up into 10 or 11 touchdowns for J.K. Dobbins, and that's kind of what we're hoping for, right? Like, we need some double-digit touchdowns because, like you said, the actual rush attempts are going to be limited for him because how they run their offense. So, in order for Dobbins to be successful, crack into the top 15 a little bit higher, he's going to have to get into the 9, 10, 11 touchdown range. So we're only going to do about 2 more of these because we got some wide receivers and a ton of them to get to. So we're going to jump into Antonio Gibson. He was running back 13 at a 13.2 points per game basis. He came on pretty strong, then he got hurt towards the end of the season. But, for a lot of us at the beginning of the season where we like Antonio Gibson, I know he didn't play a lot in college, but we like the raw talent and we drafted him really late. He kind of redeemed himself for us towards the end of the season and then got hurt. And maybe that's just a result of him not playing a lot in college. So, John, where do you think Antonio Gibson, can he finish higher than 13 on a points per game average?
I honestly think that's just about right. It's slightly concerning that J.D. McKissic is returning And as we know, it was Alex Smith under center who targeted running backs at the highest rate among Washington's quarterbacks when he was playing. And now it'll likely be someone else. Heinicke, of course, launched it deep. Maybe it's another quarterback altogether. So, I think the targets, which always matter when trying to push running backs into the top 12, could be lacking. So I'm just going to say the same for Antonio Gibson.
Yeah, no, I'm right there. I'm right there around the 11, 12, 13 range for him as well. You know, and just to go back to something I brought up before where they could potentially bring in Cam or Fitz, those guys aren't check down people either. So it's not looking good for, you know, receiving targets and receiving yards for Antonio Gibson, unless the coaching staff just hammers it home to the quarterback, whoever it is, that you've got to get this guy the ball, and they just scheme the game for him. But you know, a quarterback's going to do what a quarterback's going to do sometimes, and you know, that could be the one negative. But this guy's got all the talent. We saw him just make play after play last season, and I really do like him.
And George, higher, lower, or push for Antonio Gibson?
He's right where he needs to be.
Okay, and we're going to move into our last running back, and he's a guy that was off most everybody's list last offseason. He's sure as heck on it now. It's James Robinson, running back 4 last year, 16.1 points per game. So is that a one-year wonder for a guy who was the offense last year, or is this something that is possibly repeatable? Joe, let's start with you.
It's not repeatable. I think that, you know, for one thing, they're drafting Trevor Lawrence. That's no secret. So they're drafting Trevor Lawrence. The offense should be much better. They're going to pass the ball more. I've also heard a lot of rumors that they're going to bring in another running back too. They're going to get, I'm totally blanking on his name, the guy who stayed out for COVID. Like, he could be coming back as well.
Reichel Armstead?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Not that he's anything to, like, you know, get excited about, but like, he's another body. Like, there was literally nobody there. I mean, they brought in like Ogunbowale, like, and he didn't play. It's just, there's going to be somebody else there to challenge Robinson and take carries away, take touches away. So he's not repeating this. Will he be good? Sure. I've got him inside the top 20 right now, but that's about as high as I'm going to put him.
I agree. I think they'll bring in competition, but more importantly, I think far too many people forget the boundaries. Like, forget that we should be drafting in buckets and situations that have proven to happen before, as opposed to drafting and then chasing an outcome uphill. And just the fact that it's an undrafted free agent, a smaller undrafted free agent who is slow, who set records from scrimmage for an undrafted free agent through 13 games, who had no competition last year, are all buckets that I don't want to reach into again. So he genuinely was a terrific player, but I'll even say, like, you know, Philip Lindsay was undrafted, performed well. And then now they're basically trying to get rid of him in Denver only a few years later, despite the fact he is a good little player and makes their team competitive. So I just don't think it's repeatable, honestly.
And George, I can't imagine you think he's going to be 4 again, but how far does he slide?
Right now, I've got him just based off of what they have on the team right now. I'm not going to assume that they're going to bring in one of these big free agents like Aaron Jones, Chris Carson. I don't see them pursuing that route. If they do anything, maybe draft one, sign a cheaper free agent that ends up getting cut. But as of right now, I've got him at RB13.
Okay, so just outside of running back 1. And with that, we are outside of the running backs. We're going to move into the wide receivers. And the first wide receiver drafted, 5.5 points per game. Super disappointing for the Oakland. Where the heck are they now? Las Vegas? Okay. Wide receiver 88, Henry Ruggs. Guys, is Henry Ruggs going above, below, or about right at 88?
I think he'll finish above 88. I can't see him just being another year where he's just this bad. I think they made a mistake drafting him. He should definitely not have been the first wide receiver off the board. But I think John Gruden and Derek Carr will use him a little bit more this year. I'm going to say I don't have him ranked out that far yet. I'll say he finishes about wide receiver 57.
That's probably about right. My concerns are actually with the coaching staff and John Gruden, because they clearly had no idea how to use him. They drafted him because he was fast. That's it. And they treated him like a guy who didn't know how to run routes or break tackles when he did both in college. So his usage was just clearly incompetence by the coaching staff. And I don't know if that'll grow, honestly. Maybe. So maybe he's a buy low, but it genuinely comes down to not Ruggs' talent, but John Gruden, and whether he'll just send him on fly routes again, or if he'll actually give him manufactured touches, even one or two per game would help Ruggs immensely.
Joe, does Gruden get this right at some point?
No. I mean, there's a note here on Fantasy Pros from a quote from the GM, Mike Mayock. He says Henry has to get better. We know he's fast, but he's got to get stronger. I mean, maybe there's some credence to that. Like maybe it was that like he was just getting tackled too easily. So that's why they sent him deep. But I mean, I don't know. I know college and the pros are different, but I saw lots of tape on him where he would catch a slant route and he'd burn people, but like he'd like slip through tackles and things like that. And like, that's how he got his chunk yardage in college. He was super good at that. They didn't use him there at all. So I've got him around 60, 61 right now. I'm not feeling too good on him.
And you think that's the kind of position for Derek Carr where Henry Ruggs could succeed? Because we know Carr doesn't like to throw it down the field, although he did it a little bit with Nelson Aguilar. But he loves those slant passes, those around the line of scrimmage passes, and a guy who can slip one tackle and go 50 yards. So really curious on why he didn't do better last year, and hopefully we can see him do better this year. The next guy we've got on the list is Jerry Jeudy, wide receiver 51, 8.2 points per game. Drew Lock still the quarterback currently. You know, maybe that changes this offseason. He may also get Sutton back on the other side of him. That ought to help a little bit as well. So wide receiver 51 seems low to me for Jerry Jeudy with his talent. But Joe, let's find out. What do you think? 51, about right? Low or too high?
I think it's a little low. I think he will improve, but I'm not sure it's going to be as much as people think. I still think Drew Lock is a liability there for that offense. He has games and moments where he just looks awesome, but then there's just too many times where he looks lost and he just misses the open guy, or just it's just not good. I've got him at 40. I honestly could go lower. There's like a few guys right behind him in my rankings that I'm going, I could take him and it'd probably work out. Again, I just don't like Drew Lock. I think if Denver loaded that offense with talent, Drew Lock's not the guy.
Yeah. I'm going to say higher for Jeudy. His route running was elite. It was proven. His own drops were his own mistake. But again, I don't really care about drops. That means you're getting open. And I think you can improve on drops quite easily. So I'm going to go higher. I think they'll do enough, especially since John Elway stepped down as GM, to at least add competition under center, like a veteran. That's why I actually think Ryan Fitzpatrick is the best fit for Denver, because they can be three or four games with Lock, and when he underperforms and doesn't do well, because we know that's what he does for his career, they can throw in Fitzpatrick and he'll excel with the weapons they have in Denver already. So I'm going to go higher for Jeudy on the basis that I don't think Lock will start all 16 games, 17 games.
He's going to finish a lot higher than where he finished last year. Wide receiver 51 just seems absurd. I agree. I would love to see Ryan Fitzpatrick in Denver. Between him being Jerry Jeudy and Courtland Sutton coming back, I think Jerry Jeudy, while I absolutely loved him coming out, I think Courtland Sutton coming back being healthy will help him, because he will take off some of the coverage over the top on him. So I think he'll finish a lot higher than 51. I'm going to say right now, just off the top of my head, because I haven't really done the wide receivers yet. I've got him I'll go about wide receiver 32.
Oh, you have him in the wide receiver 3 range. That's kind of high for me. But hey, he's, you know, I mean, in that area, I guess. I probably have him, or Joe has him, somewhere in the 40s. Willing to move him up a little bit, move him back a little bit. But
the talent's there, no denying that. But I worry about A, the quarterback, but B, the return of Courtland Sutton too. That's going to impact his. He's not going to get. He may not get 113 targets again.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, we're going to go with the number 3 wide receiver on this list, CeeDee Lamb. Now, this surprises me, and I know it's points per game, but wide receiver 16. man, that seems awfully high to me, especially without Dak Prescott being there most of the season. 11.3 points per game. And Joe, we're going to start with you. Wide receiver 16, that seems too high, but maybe I'm thinking of it the wrong way, especially with Dak coming back. Joe, is CeeDee Lamb going to be higher than 16?
I've actually got him at 23. I think, I mean, look, that's still good. He's going to have plenty of wide receiver 1 weeks, even in that range. You know, this is why I always say go after your running backs first, get those guys that you know you can rely on. And then there's just so many guys who any given week can be top 10. CeeDee Lamb's one of those guys. He just is a home run hitter. He's super talented. Dak loved throwing him the ball. And with Dak back, it's, you know, it's going to be good for him. But I don't see him finishing quite at the pace he finished last year.
Yeah, Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup still around. So I guess I'll say the same. The fact he was still pacing to lead the team in end zone targets, and there are lots of injuries and COVID or whatnot to talk about with that team. But overall from Dak, as long as Dak is back for all 16 games, there's opportunity for him to go higher, Lamb. But I'll say the same just to be safe.
And George, 16, high, low, or indifferent?
I think he's right where he needs to be at 16. I think with Dak coming back, if Zeke cannot get going again next year, Dak's going to have three fantastic options to throw the ball to, and Cooper, Lamb, and Gallup. I can't put CeeDee Lamb much lower than 16 at this moment.
I guess the real question is he going to be able to keep that phone away from his girlfriend?
No.
He's not that fast. All right, so Jalen Reagor is number 4 on our list. Talk about disappointing rookie season. You know, Wentz was bad, and you know, Hurts was inconsistent. Ended up being wide receiver 84, 6.5 points per game. Couple times he flashed, but not really a lot to talk about. George, I want to start with you there. Wide receiver 84 seems like a pretty low bar to cross. I think we can safely say 84 is probably too low for a guy we think has talent. But how much higher do you think he could be, especially with a quarterback who's only started a few games in the NFL?
I'm not going to go really super high on Reagor. I do like him. I'm just concerned about the situation. They need to give him a true wide receiver 1 on that team. I don't think Reagor is a wide receiver 1 in the NFL. I think he's a great complementary receiver as a wide receiver 2. I'm going to say right now I'm going to put him at wide receiver 41.
That's probably about right. Again, it helps that Hurts launched the ball deep at quite a high rate in his 3 starts.
Yep.
But also he was inefficient. Those air yards are going to be what we call prayer yards in the industry, where they don't matter at all. They're just inefficient deep targets. So I'll say stay the same. It can honestly go either way if Hurts somehow improves throwing deep, but I'll go ahead and stay the same. Reagor will have the opportunity, at least now that we know we're taking DeSean Jackson's targets and reps out of the offense altogether.
Yeah, I've got around 58 right now. You know, I think he's going to get better just because he's going to get hopefully better quarterback play this year than what we saw from Wentz, and he will improve as a route runner and things like that as well. But I don't think there's a whole lot you can expect here. You know, everybody's already said it. Hurts is still going to be inefficient with his downfield passing. So unless he hits the home run ball, those yards where the ball's in the air probably don't matter.
So last year's stud, Justin Jefferson, 14.4 points per game, wide receiver 7. Man, to me, the last year was kind of, I don't want to say a floor, but I think like in that system, with the way Kirk Cousins plays, having Thielen on the other side of him, I think 7 is probably right where he's going to finish, but maybe to me, I think he's going to be potentially top 5 this year. He played great last year, 1400 yards. George, is my love for Justin Jefferson reaching my Corey Davis love, and is that too high?
No, because we've actually seen Justin Jefferson be a very good wide receiver in the NFL up until last year, where Corey Davis finally had that Devontae Parker breakout. Justin Jefferson hurts my heart. The one of the leagues I had him in, right before he actually started to break out, I traded him in a second round pick in this year's draft for Kareem Hunt. And that was a team that desperately needed a wide receiver. but I needed a running back as well because all mine were injured. And so he broke out. It hurt my heart, but I think he'll finish wide receiver 11 next year. I don't have him in the top 10.
I think it's about right, honestly. If anything, we're getting two extra games from him. Because remember, he didn't even start till week 3. They were starting BC Johnson, who they essentially didn't even play the moment they put Jefferson on the field as a boundary wide out in week 3. He excelled from both the slot and outside. So yeah, the fact that we're going to get hopefully 16 healthy games as a starter from him, like, it's certainly possible he's a top 10 option. But I'll stay the same just to be safe.
And Joe.
Yeah, I've got him right at 7, so say the same for me. By the way, I want to ask you, man. You traded him, what, before week 3? Man,
I did.
Brutal. Ugh.
Yeah.
That was like, you thought he was nothing not being used because he wasn't even starting. And then the first time he starts, he goes off for 7 for 175. Ouch.
Yep.
Not to laugh at you, man, but that hurts.
No, it's...
That's one of those trades that's going to haunt you.
That particular team I drafted so good too. So I drafted, clearly I took Joe Burrow because I had the 101. I took DeAndre Swift, Justin Jefferson, and Justin Herbert. And I ended up trading both Justin Jefferson and Justin Herbert because apparently I don't like Justin.
Yeah, I guess it's a good thing we don't have. Well, it's probably why we don't have Justin's on the show. But we're going to move on to. I'm going to skip Brandon Ayuk. We're going to go to T. Higgins, 10.1 points per game, wide receiver 26 with the Bengals. Is with Burrow potentially coming back, is he going higher or lower than 26 next year?
I'll start this one, Jason. I think he'll be higher because he'll be getting some of those targets that A.J. Green was getting that he absolutely didn't deserve.
Well, yeah, and he's going to get a full year of Burrow, hopefully. Yeah. So
hopefully.
Yeah, this is going to be an easy hire for me.
And John.
Agree. He's a terrific. Like, I actually think it's buying low where he's going in offseason drafts right now, just because the ceiling is absolutely there. Averaged just over 8 targets per game in the 8 full games he played with Burrow. And then I think the return of the same coaching staff and defense that we have zero faith in makes it better for the Bengals offense that we do believe can rear back and throw a lot. So yeah, Higgins to the moon this year.
All right, and one more guy I want to talk about for sure is Laviska Shenault, 9.2 points per game, wide receiver 53. We all know they're getting a quarterback this offseason. He's supposed to be pretty good. I don't know if you guys have heard of Trevor Lawrence, but with all the talent, you know, the injuries were the issue for Laviska Shenault coming out of college, so that's why he wasn't talked about with one of the top guys, but he's got all the talent in the world. John, do you think he's going to be better than wide receiver 53 with Trevor Lawrence under center?
I do. He was more of a floor player last year, which was surprising since he showed a lot more than that prior to getting injured his final year at Colorado. It's interesting because we know Urban Meyer, at least at Ohio State, loved the gadget players like this from the middle of the field, the Curtis Samuels and everyone else, and Paris Campbell, for instance. Will he carry that over to the NFL? I have no idea. But then also you couple in the fact that, yes, Trevor Lawrence, and also that Darrell Bevell, who wanted to go deep with the Lions, like that's what he wanted to do and got fired for it. It's an interesting offense for sure. So if they use Shenault at all going deep, then, of course, like I think he could be honestly a top 24 player. So I'll go higher.
Yeah, I'm higher. I'm not quite that high on him. I actually am slightly downgrading the Jags receivers, both him and Shark. Like, kind of think they're going to bring in somebody else. Either it's going to be the draft or a free agency or something like that. And that's going to hurt the stock here. First time NFL coach. And then obviously a rookie, we like him as a rookie, but he's still a rookie. So that's, we'll see what happens, but I'm not all in. There's too many other guys that have done it before above him that I'm not willing to move him over.
And George.
I think he'll finish better than wide receiver 53. John hit it right on the head. He was a very safe floor play last year. I expect with Trevor Lawrence coming in that will get even better. I don't think that Jaguars bring in a wide receiver at all, to be honest. I think that they'll be happy with Chark, Schultz, and Keelan Cole. So, yeah, right now I've got Laviska Shenault. I penciled him in right now at wide receiver 36.
All right, and I know I said that was the last one, but I heard the collective screaming of people asking me why I'm overlooking Chase Claypool, much like most of the NFL did before the Steelers picked him up. So he finished at wide receiver 23, 11.5 points per game, you know, buoyed by, you know, let's just face it, one of the biggest games of the year last year. Where do you guys think Chase Claypool ends up? And we'll start with George on this one.
I think he finishes better than wide receiver 23. I don't think Juju comes back. I think you're going to see a lot of Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypool going forward for the Steelers. I think he'll finish right around wide receiver 17, 18 range. I just hope going into next year we see a lot more consistency from him because, like you said, his season last year was really buoyed by one of the biggest games of the year.
Yeah, what I love most about Chase Claypool is that they were not only willing to go deep, but they were giving him carries inside the 10. Mm-hmm. So they were concertedly giving him touches that were not targets, thus giving him opportunities to score in a variety of ways. So, of course, I love Chase Claypool, especially taking out Juju Smith-Schuster's targets from this offense.
And Joe?
I like him. I do just worry about, you know, look, Ben looked real bad last year, and the offense, you know, it was get rid of the ball quick, and it worked. It lowered his sack rate a lot, but it really hurt his yardage total, his efficiency, and things like that. So I kind of do worry that, you know, unless they can go back to just letting Ben sling it, that's going to cap Claypool's ceiling. But he's still a talented player. They're finding ways to get him touches, as John said, and so that's gonna make him at least a wide receiver too.
All right, and that's gonna close us out. I know there's a lot more talented wide receivers, but there's only so much time in the day, and I gotta get these guys out of here. We have some tight ends written down here, and I'll let you guys talk about any tight end you really want to, but to me it looks kind of like a dumpster fire. We got Cole Kmet, Devin Asiasi, Dalton Keene, Adam Trautman, and Harrison Bryant. You know, Trautman is interesting because they are probably going to drop their tight end one. You know, Cole Kmet was, you know, the talked about guy, but the Bears seem to collect tight end. So anybody here worth talking about, guys? And Joe, I'll let you start, and you can just say yes or no.
I mean, I think Komet's the only one who's semi-interesting, but not draftable.
Assuming they do not re-sign Jimmy Graham and it's the Cole Kmet show, I think he's interesting. For me, for like Dynasty, I do like Devin Asiasi, not to return value this year, but I was a Asiasi guy coming out of college, was the explosive receiver in Chip Kelly's offense at UCLA. Was injured or on the COVID list, didn't even get a chance to play last year for a dumpster fire Patriots offense. I don't know if we learned anything at all about him, but I do like just sending literally nothing and getting him returned, just stashing him. And then, yeah, Trautman and Bryant, because Njoku's a free agent, and Bryant, whenever Hooper was out, actually proved successful and capable for a rookie. So yeah, I think he's interesting. But again, if Hooper's healthy, he wasn't used or targeted at all. So just a Trautman situation is much better than Bryant's, let's say, if Hooper is healthy.
Yeah, I agree. If there's no Jimmy Graham, Cole Kmet's interesting. I agree. Devin Asiasi is definitely somebody you want to stash more so than rely on next year. I do like Adam Trautman. If there is no Jared Cook, I foresee him being the starter. Depending on if Drew Brees does come back next year, I know he has not filed his retirement papers yet, so there is a chance that he, as of right now, that he does come back. If he does, I kind of do like Adam Trautman. I find him a little bit interesting.
And then I'm going to say, just because he's on the list and didn't get any mention, Dalton Keene has the best tight end mustache in the league. So guys, go look that
go
up.
Go Hokies.
So, yeah. You know, I'm going to close this show out, guys. I appreciate, you know, we've been doing this for probably an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes. So I appreciate you guys running a good bit long with us. So we're going to start with John. We're going to give you a little bit of time since we took all your night to give some plugs.
Oh, nothing too much. First of all, I appreciate y'all having me on. This is a lot of fun. And then also, you can just go to Twitter, follow me at not Jay Daigle again until I finally win over Daigle or John Daigle. And then stay tuned to RotoWorld, RIP, or NBC Sports Edge, whatever the hell you want to call it now, because my best ball tiers, which are, you know, 130 plus blurbs of ranked best ball players tiered off, will be out by Monday. So that's coming up now.
And Joe, where can they find you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at F6P_Joe. Fantasy6pack.net is where you can find all the content, the rankings, that and all that stuff. And then on Thursday nights, I host the Fantasy Six Pack Hour with my co-host AJ Applegarth.
And before I get into George, John, any thoughts of taking Dirk Daigle?
Dirk Daigle is actually what I want to name my child, not after Dirk Diggler, but after Dirk Nowitzki, since I am from Dallas. But yeah, you know, Dirk Daigle will be interesting. I don't even know, is that free? I wouldn't think so. People are too clever on Twitter.
All right, and George,
I'm looking it up.
Please do, let me know. I might have to change my name.
And listen, if it's not taken, I'll wait to publish this till you got it. So George,
Simple Man here. You can just find me on Twitter at BFTGpod. Yeah, that's how you can get a hold of me.
And you can find me at BFTGJason, and you can find all the Sleeper Wire shows at Sleeper Wire Show. You can go to sleeperwire.com, and like I mentioned, join our contest, join our Patreon, sleeperwire.com/Patreon. Guys, thank you so much for joining us this week, and I'm looking forward to talking to you next time.